it's inevitable that we're going to have a severe epidemic. I called it the difficult truth in my slides. It's inevitable. We're going to have it. We can't avoid it. No one else in the world has avoided it. We're not going to avoid it.
Infectious disease specialist Professor Salim Abdul Karim, who chairs the government's advisory committee on COVID-19, has become a household name in SA for being the man in the know about coronavirus. Professor Karim sat down with Multimedia Live to explain why SA's lockdown was so important and what recommendation his committee has put to government to begin to open up the economy.
Lockdown has certainly had the effect of containing community transmission. The main thing we are trying to do is to control community transmission. When we started the lockdown, we probably had a few thousand infections. We want those few thousand infections to become a dead end. In other words, that person was infected, that person doesn't interact with anyone else, and the virus and that infection comes to an end. We'll get some idea of how that works based on the numbers. And based on what we're seeing right now, it looks like we pretty much have community transmission at a pretty low level. It's there, make no mistake, it's there.
Yeah.
But it's at a pretty low level, and the lockdown has achieved that. It's not going to carry on. You know that. I said so, right?
Yeah.
As soon as we end the lockdown,
it's going to start.
It's going to start. Of course, it has to start because there are people infected. It's going to start again. The difference is that now we'll be ready.
What do you mean?
When this epidemic starts, when it starts going up and the infections occur, it moves very fast. Within a matter of 2-3 weeks, you go from 10,000 people infected to 250,000, 500,000, just like that. Before you know it, a lot of people are infected. And then they all need medical care. And they come in their thousands, like you saw in New York.
Yeah.
In their thousands coming to the hospital. They can't open the door to the hospital because they're just everywhere. They are sitting in the streets, they are waiting in the waiting rooms, there's no place. And they are dying because they need ventilation.
Yeah.
And we only got limited ICU beds. Mm. So that's what we saw in Italy. It was scary. Our colleagues in Italy, what they described, we wouldn't want to have that.
Yeah.
Our colleagues in New York, that it was important we get ready, a picture of New York, showing how Central Park was converted into a field hospital. Because your problem is, you have to keep the hospitals clear. You don't want anyone going to the hospitals. You only want the sick patients going. So somewhere you have to have the patients coming, they triage, and in the triage, only those who really need to go to the hospital get sent to the hospital. Everybody else is dealt with there. So you protect the hospital. Because otherwise, the hospital will just, they just won't cope. The whole system will just collapse. It just collapses.
Yeah.
So we're trying to, so we're setting that up.
From someone like me who doesn't know much about science and viruses and epidemics, when I look at how the spread has been happening in South Africa, obviously there's evidence that the lockdown has worked in terms of making sure that we're not all getting infected.
Yeah.
But a lockdown is not a forever approach.
Mm-hmm.
And at that end, we cannot, I don't think we can be certain that now the virus is finished. Definitely now we can open. So what is the science behind what you guys will be telling the minister and the president? Okay, now maybe we can do a partial opening of ABC, or should we continue with the lockdown?
I mean, it's not a secret what we've told the president and the minister. It's inevitable that we're going to have a severe epidemic. I called it the difficult truth in my slides. It's inevitable. We're going to have it. We can't avoid it. no one else in the world has avoided it. We're not going to avoid it. I said, unless we have some special mojo, you know, I don't know, like a Mandela factor or something. It's uniquely South African, you know?
Yeah.
We're not going to avoid this problem. It's coming. And we need to accept that it is coming. And the lockdown bought us time. Important time. Make no mistakes. And it was well worth buying that time. Because we would have just been overwhelmed if we didn't have that time. There comes a point at which you need to make some assessment of your community transmission. And if you have very substantial community transmission, then you can consider that the lockdown maybe needs to be longer. If you do not have significant community transmission, then you should consider easing the lockdown. And we made two pieces of advice that we've already conveyed. The first is, don't end the lockdown abruptly. Don't tell people it's ending today. Then everybody must go to work tomorrow. That's trouble. You're going to mix high and low risk, and you're going to spread the virus again. And we'll undo all of the good work we've done.
Yeah.
So we explained to the president, and went to the minister and the president, that they should do it in a systematic way. They were going to do that anyway. It wasn't something new. And we explain some things that maybe they want to consider in the way they do it. So if we're going to end the lockdown, say, at the end of the month, then they need to think about, okay, if that's the date on which we want it to be completely ended, when do we start and how do we get to that date? And that's what we suggested. The second thing we suggested is that we may want to consider protecting our elderly.
Yeah.
Our elderly are at the highest risk. See, young people don't really have much of a problem with this disease. In fact, children have almost, you know, they have very low fatality. So very few children are even affected by this disease. They get it as a very mild condition. The moment we open the schools, the kids are going to spread it. There's nothing we can do about that. But we know that it's not a problem if they get it. But they go home, and they go and play with the granny and the grandpa, that's a problem. We got to protect granny and grandpa. So we suggesting that we have a partial lockdown, that we ask the elderly, everyone over the age of 65, to voluntarily, on their own, to go into their own lockdown. But it's not a mandatory lockdown. It's for their own good.
It's for their own.
It's not for our good, but it's for their good. We have to be asking them to do that. And I suggested that we might want to do that until the end of September.
Professor Karim also broke down the progress being made on a treatment and vaccine.
Almost every virus we know leads to antibodies. It's the body's natural response to viruses.
Yes.
So we expected that with this coronavirus, the body will make antibodies. And when we saw the data coming from our colleagues in China, we saw that patients were making antibodies. So the difference was that the antibodies don't come up very early. It takes about a week before the antibodies become detectable. So that means that we can't tell if somebody has this coronavirus based on the antibodies. That's why we had to use the swabs, and that's why we use the polymerase chain reaction, the PCR test. The PCR test looks for the RNA of the virus. It doesn't look for antibodies. Now, when these antibodies come up, for most viruses, the antibodies protect you for a long time, often for life. Let me give you an example. You get measles, and you get the antibodies against measles, and you then protect it for life. You will not get measles ever again. We now have a vaccine. So instead of getting real measles, we give you a vaccine. And the vaccine creates the same antibodies as if you got infected, or similar antibodies. And so coronavirus we know these antibodies come up, we know they are present, and right now we don't know whether they protect you from getting the coronavirus infection again. So we're looking to our colleagues in China and asking them, because now they got a lot of people who got antibodies.
Yeah.
And we're asking them, are they getting reinfected? And the answer we're getting is that it's not clear, but it doesn't look like they're getting reinfected. Because the PCR test can remain positive for quite a long time. So, you know, after you've got this infection and you clear the virus and you get antibodies, you can still detect the PCR for several days afterwards. And up to a month, you can still get the PCR test. So I would say the factual situation is that we know that everyone develops antibodies against the virus, and we don't know whether those antibodies protect you from getting reinfected.
Oh, I see.
So the antibodies may not protect you from getting reinfected, but they will protect you from getting disease. They protect you from getting sick.
Sick.
We're not going to have a vaccine in the next year, you know, perhaps for the next 2 years. So a vaccine is not going to help us in this epidemic right now. The vaccine is going to come after the epidemic is over, in all likelihood. So we can't depend on the vaccine to help us right now. I'm hoping it will help us for the next round of this virus, and or for a similar virus. I'm more optimistic we'll get a treatment. I'm not sure when we're going to get a treatment. Not immediately, and probably not fast enough for our epidemic. But I think we will see good progress in terms of treatment. I think vaccine will probably take longer. If you're asking me between the two, the vaccine is really important. I would say a vaccine is much more critical, because a vaccine will protect the entire nation. Yes. We vaccinate a certain number of people up to a point where we get herd immunity, and then we protect everyone. Whereas the treatment is a one by one thing. Yeah. So I have seen how this crisis, in the form of a little virus that comes from bats, but was originated from pangolins at the Wuhan seafood market, how that little virus is teaching us about what it means to an entire nation to have strong, enlightened leadership.
Interview conducted by Sunday Times reporter Zimasa Matewane. For Multimedia Live, I've been Paige Muller.